unfiltered, uncensored. Ready to take on the issues the mainstream media is afraid to engage in. Bringing you the hard-hitting truth. This is the Mass Resistance Radio Program. On Boston's 1330 WRCA. Now, your host and voice of the Mass Resistance Movement, Brian Kamiker.
Hello, everyone. This is Brian Kamiker, and you are listening to Radio Free Massachusetts, Mass Resistance Radio, here on WRCA in Cambridge. This is the radio station that is not afraid to give you the honest truth of what's going on. And believe me, what is going on, this is going to be a very, very shocking radio show.
Well, if you are in Cambridge, you have to have a pretty strong stomach.
Yes, I'm here with Amy, who is back.
I'm back. I'm not happy to be back, yeah. I must say. I've lived in Massachusetts for 37 years, and every year it gets harder to come back after vacation because things are in such disarray here.
What's been going on? I mean, just
the environment, the physical environment is in such disarray. I can't stand to be around here. I go out west every year, and I actually drove back cross-country with my son, which was great. He's an excellent driver, and we had a lot of fun. And I went through many different states, and everything looked a heck of a lot better than here. And I'm talking about things like weeds, graffiti, rundown buildings, you know, the highways in Massachusetts. I'm still adjusting. I've been back a week.
Well, you'll be happy to find out that, I guess except for New Jersey, we pay the most per mile to maintain our highways.
Yeah, but I've been thinking for a long time that our physical environment deterioration is analogous to the deterioration in our social environment and our, you know, it's sort of a symbol, a very visible sign of how corrupt our society and government has become here. You know, and it's not just the Big Dig that explains this. I mean, when you drive down 128 or Storrow Drive and you see these weeds and the filth and the litter, and needless to say, the cement chunks are falling off of bridges, too.
Yeah.
And this is just, it's appalling. I mean, that's what comes of living in a one-party state.
Well, it comes, the general sense of corruption. You know, it's not just the social corruption. It's not just what the courts do and what the legislature does. It's the whole environment, the whole mentality of corruption. And, you know, that's, you know.
Well, it goes along with it, demanding more and more and more benefits and getting away with less and less work.
And so, you know, the reason for this radio show and for Mass Resistance is, as I think it was another radio announcer said, don't be cynical, don't be depressed. You know, do
I'm
something.
Depressed.
You know, take action. And that's what, you know, that's what people need to do. You know, as we're getting back into the legislature, and maybe I guess we need to get started right now as to talking about what's going on. Some of the stuff that you've been doing as far as research on this whole transgender bill is unbelievable.
Well, I think the only way I got through some of the research was that I was able to sort of refresh myself by breathing mountain air and looking at mountains and taking a lot of walks and hikes, because the stuff is really, really disturbing. As we've talked about last year, and now again, there is a bill, a very dangerous bill filed in the House. That's Bill 1722. And basically, it erases all reasonable boundaries on public behavior of people with recognized psychiatric disorder called gender identity disorder. They're trying to normalize it. It's just really a crazy, crazy bill. And I went section by section to see exactly what they were going to address. And it's a very long bill. It's got 32 sections. I think what we're going to do is talk about it in little chunks over the next few weeks, maybe even a few months. It's so long.
So, yeah, just to, you know, backtrack a little, H-1722 is in the House before the Judiciary Committee.
There's going to be a hearing in the fall.
There's going to be a hearing in the fall. And this is a bill called the Transgender Rights and Hate Crimes Bill, which is, I mean, one of the most dangerous bills ever filed. The gay movement is riding the wave of, you know, the homosexuality victories that they've had. I mean, in the schools and the gay marriage and all of this stuff. And this is the next frontier.
Right. It's like they've achieved everything except the lowering of the age of consent, practically,
yeah, and
that they had on their agenda, and now they've joined with the transgender transsexuals to help them out. They've got GLAAD working with them. They've got Mass Equality behind this bill.
Yeah, and what this would do is protect and promote a range, as you said, of you know, bizarre and obscene behaviors in the schools and business and public accommodations, and would criminalize any critical response, real or perceived. So in other words, if you had a man wearing a dress and dressing as a woman in an elementary school, this bill would not only protect that person, it would keep any parents from asking that any criticism of that person would be a hate crime.
Now, it's amazing how many legislative sponsors they have for this bill, and worse yet, Governor Patrick, when he was campaigning back in September of 06, said that he would do whatever the transgender movement wanted him to do, and that means he'll sign this bill. So, unfortunately, given what we saw with the Constitutional Convention on the Marriage Amendment, it looks like they've got more votes than, well, we hope they don't have more votes than they need to pass this. Once we really explain what the content is, let's hope that the legislators aren't that bad.
Well, you never know. They're starting to, this is the homosexual movement's next frontier, mm-hmm. is the transgender movement, and forcing it upon society in many ways, the way they did.
Such as the media campaign that's underway right now. The Boston Globe's had a bunch of stories like the transsexual doctor in Somerville.
It's
everywhere.
Yeah,
and, you know, ABC has had stuff. CNN has had stuff. It's all over. Time Magazine, Newsweek. They're all pushing this idea as if it was a legitimate idea to begin with. And one of the things that transgender movement has done is to adopt the strategy that won for the homosexuals, which is to put a human face on their demands, and they take, I'm sure, their more successful members of their community in what they say is passing. You know, like if you're a man, you pass for a female. You've done a good job of you know, changing your appearance and voice and whatever, and you go into the state house. And you tell your sob story to the legislator.
Like the transgender lobby. Well, let's back up a second and talk about what transgenderism is. I recall in the late 1990s, the, you know, gay days in the school started to include gay transgender days. And, you know, you could see that concept coming in. I recall it, you know, my own kids' school, Newton North, they had a man come in, or no, it was a woman who came in and talked to the kids about how she was having her breasts removed, was taking hormones to become a man, and, you know, the other kinds of things, essentially having her body mutilated. And this, this was perceived as, you know, as normal to the kids.
Well, they're presenting it as normal.
And so... And then I remember at some of the events that the, you know, the homosexuals would have outside of the state house, you would see these men who were clearly men dressing in women's clothes, marching up and down the streets. And it's becoming more and more.
Well, it's not just marching up and down the streets. Some of the main activists who are in the state house testifying and heading organizations are, in fact, transsexuals, transgenders.
But essentially, as you uncovered earlier, that most of this involves mutilating the body, having one's breasts cut off as a woman.
As Dr. Diggs put it, our friend John Diggs, who has spoken on our show before about things like the HPV vaccine, he calls this hormonal manipulation and genital mutilation.
And men having their, you know, their genitals removed.
And they go beyond that. The men actually have artificial cavities built in their bodies. And one thing I found out, this is not fun reading about this stuff, people. It's just horrible. I didn't know this until the last year. The women who want to be men, actually, part of their healthcare demands, part of what they want as part of their treatment, it's not just that they have their breasts removed and get testosterone shots, but they grow their beards and they have all this other stuff.
Yeah, they grow beards.
But they wear things, okay? They wear fake male genitals. And, you know, you can buy the $100 model, you can buy the $300 model, And if you're really, really rich and really committed, you can actually have a fake organ constructed. And, you know, I didn't know that that was happening. So this is just one of the many medical costs that the taxpayers of Massachusetts will be funding.
What causes people to want to do this? This is interesting. I mean, the average observer would look at this and say, you know, a male homosexual wants to be used as a woman, and then the next step is to actually become a woman. But this is an actual disorder.
Yeah, it's still in the book that defines the disorders for the psychiatric profession, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, which is shorthanded DSM. It lists gender identity disorder. One of the things that we just came across recently is an article in First Things magazine back in 2004. And the psychiatrist in chief at Johns Hopkins University, the fellow who became that in 1975, actually wrote this incredible article. You can look it up online. First Things is the name of the magazine.
I think we'll put it up on the website.
Yeah, we will eventually get to that.
Massresistance.org.
And his name is Dr. Paul McHugh, M-C-H-U-G-H. Surgical Sex is the name of the article. And he observed that the psychiatric profession has wasted scientific and technical resources and damaged our professional credibility by collaborating with madness rather than trying to study, cure, and ultimately prevent it.
And this is madness.
And he's referring to gender identity disorder. And he actually began his practice and began as the head of psychiatry there at Johns Hopkins approving these sex change operations. But then he explains in the article how he and his colleagues did a lot of research follow-up on the people who went through this, and they realized they were doing so much more harm to these people. Dr. McHugh believes that psychiatrists are collaborating with mental illness by performing sex change operations on individuals. The problem is one of the mind, not the body. A person who has gender identity disorder needs therapy, not surgery, so says Andrea Lafferty at Traditional Values. She was on our show back in April speaking about this issue.
Right. And you know, the depravity of where this movement will go. We talked about this earlier this year, where in Children's Hospital now, they're experimenting on children. They're giving children who they think may have this hormones so that their puberty will be delayed, and when they get older, that they can have sex change operations.
So I thought the first issue that we would cover that's covered in this bill that we're worried about is this whole issue of the medical treatments. There are a lot of things you can read about this online, and you have to take a deep breath before you do so. A lot of people have paid attention to those stories that have been much in the news lately. There's that construction worker who actually worked on the big dig who has GLAD helping him with a case before the Internal Revenue Service.
Let's repeat. GLAD is a Gay, Lesbian Advocates and Defenders. It is a homosexual lobbying firm which gets a lot of public funding, and they push the envelope.
They were behind the Goodridge marriage ruling or marriage decision by the SJC. They argued for that, and a lot of the staff members appear to share this sort of, shall we say, identity, transgender. So
they look like they were the other sex.
Well, you know, all you have to do is get on the GLAD website and you'll see what we mean. But they are helping this person who is a man, claims to be a woman, who is suing the IRS for reimbursement of what he considers were medical costs. The IRS is saying that they are, in fact, cosmetic changes that he made to his body. And, you know, I was just looking on the online, and I came across Lawyers Weekly of Massachusetts, and he talked about some of the changes that this man has undergone. And one thing we've noticed is that in all of the newspaper and magazine online accounts, they use the pronoun that the transgender activist wants them to use.
Yeah,
so this is man, but you'll hear in the little thing I'm reading about what he had done to his body.
Let's take a quick break.
Okay, let me finish the sentence.
All right.
Referred to as she, not he.
Is she. All right. This is Brian Kammacher, Mass Resistance with Mass Resistance Radio Show with Amy. Go to our website, massresistance.org. You'll see a lot of this. go to our hard-hitting blog, massresistance.net. We will be right back. Don't go away. And we're back. Brian Kamiker, Mass Resistance Radio, and we are talking about an extremely distasteful subject, which is going to be forced on you in Massachusetts very soon. The legislature is dealing with a bizarre, horrific bill being pushed by the homosexual lobby.
So this is the transgender rights bill, and what's going to happen is one of the areas where they're going to get these radical demands is in the area of health care. The changes that they want to make to their body. And, you know, they want to demand that the insurance pay for it, whether it's the mass insurance, the state insurance plan or individual insurance plans. You know, so one way or another, you're going to pay for it, either higher premiums, tax dollars.
Yeah. You're playing for people to mutilate their bodies because a man thinks he's a woman.
And they're going to be able to enforce that. It's not any longer going to be a question. I mean, right now we're seeing this fellow with this lawsuit against the IRS, and we're seeing this prisoner in the Mass state prison system who wants a sex change. Right now, people can fight this in court. But if this law is passed, both the Mass Commission Against Discrimination and the employment statutes will be changed to mandate that there is no discrimination on the basis of gender identity.
So I don't think people really understand that if some man wants to wear a dress working in your company serving customers, it will be a hate crime if you don't allow it or even say anything about it. If a public school teacher wants to do this, of course, opens the floodgates to pushing this on public school kids.
And one way they're going to ensure that the trans people win their case is that they're going to put one of the things this bill does is to be sure that the Mass Commission Against Discrimination has transgender members on it. Yeah. So you can.
I mean, as if that's not a bizarre group already.
Well, I guess whatever. But getting back to the healthcare, though, I mean, there's not going to be any way that anyone can fight this anymore. You know, your company is going to have to include in its health benefit package transition costs. They call them transition costs. Now, getting back to
transition, transitioning from a woman to a man.
Okay, let me describe. This is the editor of Mass Lawyers Weekly supports this man's transition, this construction worker who's being supported by GLAAD. Okay, here's what Lawyers Weekly editor wrote. As she explained, the medical procedures necessary to switch genders, one got the impression that this type of surgery is even more complicated than it sounds. In addition to genital surgical sex reassignment, note that he does not say what is removed and what is constructed. This man endured breast surgery, a procedure to her trachea to remove the appearance of her Adam's apple, a nose job, cheek implants, lip augmentation, an operation to shrink her prominent chin, and a procedure to pull the scalp forward.
Now this was Lawyers Weekly.
This is Lawyers Weekly editor saying that this person should be supported in this with his case against the IRS. And that's not saying anything about the ongoing hormonal injections, that the female hormones that this man is having injected in constantly for the rest of his life. And, of course, no one really knows what the impact of that is on his long-term health.
Yeah, I mean, keep in mind that this person, this will always be, from a DNA standpoint, a man.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can mutilate your body any way you want. You can wear all kinds of clothes. You will be a man forever, and
now,
a woman the same way, from a DNA standpoint.
Now, what the activists are doing, they're taking the standards from a transgender activist health advocacy group and presenting that to the court as fact, that this is what has to be offered to these people. And like with the guy in prison, that Mr. Kosolek, he is saying that he will commit suicide if he doesn't get a sex change operation. So everyone's skittering about saying, oh, we can't have him commit suicide, so we have to give him a sex change operation. Now, there's an interesting little footnote. The judge in the first case with that man a couple years ago, Mr. Kosolek, who is a wife murderer, a convicted wife murderer, who claims he's a woman. Judge Mark Wolf, recognize that name?
Judge of David Parker fame.
Yeah, he's the one who issued that hideous ruling on the David Parker federal case recently. That same judge said that this is a recognized medical condition, and that convicted wife murderer must receive appropriate medical care. Well, the problem is they're defining appropriate medical care according to these whacked transgender activists.
In other words, they want to, you know, screw them up worse.
Well, and that's exactly what that article in First Things that I mentioned says happens. These people do not improve their psychiatric well-being in any way. So right now we've got cases in the courts about sex change operations for prisoners, and we've got this other fellow who's a construction worker who wants the IRS to reimburse him for what he calls medical expenses. But soon, like I say, the most important thing here is nobody's going to be able to argue in court if this bill passes. Corporations are going to have to include it. Remember the Human Rights Campaign, that radical homosexual trans advocacy group in Washington, has a corporate index. They rate corporations on how trans and homosexual friendly they are. The only corporations that get 100% are those which guarantee transitioning costs to their employees.
And that is a whole interesting show on how corporations sell out to these kinds of groups.
Bear in mind that this bill will directly address the employment statutes, and it will include that you cannot discriminate against somebody on the basis of their gender, identity, or expression in employment. The current statute, which they're going to add that phrase gender, identity, and expression to, currently reads that employers cannot refuse to hire or employ or to discharge from employment such an individual or to discriminate against such an individual in compensation or in terms, conditions, or privileges of employment. So terms certainly will cover the health benefits. Wow. Or what the transgender people call health benefits. And they define that as transition costs and whatever. So it's really not a happy scene.
This is our Massachusetts legislature. You know, ladies and gentlemen, you need to, you know, go on the Mass Resistance website, contact us, get involved, say, yes, I want to do something. This happens because people do nothing. And let me tell you, you know, these homosexual activist groups are raising millions of dollars, and they want to push their agenda on you in your society, and they are going to continue to roll. You know, you can't just be cynical. You can't just be depressed. You can't just say, well, I'm going to maybe move to another state, because it will happen there.
You know, what's surprising right now, I forget exactly how many, but there may be maybe 8 or 10 states which already have a transgender rights law on the books. And I believe that the only reason more lawsuits like this have not come so far in those states is because they're waiting to get it in place federally, which they're working on
right now. They're waiting to do it here.
And here. Yeah. And when they get the leading states on board, then you're going to see where this is going.
This bill is broader than anything I've seen.
Yeah, well, we're only talking about the health issues right now, which fall both under the Mass Commission Against Discrimination and the employment issues. But, you know, what's really interesting to me also, if you read some of their own books, they know they're caught in a catch-22 if people really stop to think about this. On the one hand, they're saying, we're not sick. This is not a psychiatric or psychological problem.
These are the activists.
Yeah, the trans activists. They're saying we are normal people. Gender is fluid. There are not only two genders. There are, you know, multiple genders, whatever.
And
this is normal to think of ourselves this way, and there's nothing abnormal about us. At the same time, they're saying this is something that requires medical benefits. So they're saying, yeah, we do have something that requires medical care.
Right.
You know, my gender identity needs all of these transition costs taken care of.
And, you know, as you were talking about earlier, you talk to real legitimate health professionals with the door closed, and they will say these people are you know, they need serious, you know, mental help. That, you know, the answer isn't to mutilate their bodies. The answer is to help these people, because who knows what happened to them in their lives to cause them to want to do this?
Yeah, and that's why that article in First Things by the psychiatrist at Johns Hopkins
we need
is so
to
important.
Post that.
We talked so far about men who were trying to become women. I also came across this interesting book. Boy, this was great airline reading. I think the young man next to me He kept looking at me. The name of this book is Just Add Just Add Hormones, An Insider's Guide to the Transsexual Experience. And it's by a person named Matt Kelly, who is a woman who has tried to transform herself into a man. And it's the most bizarre thing I've ever read. I recommend it. I bought it either at Borders or Barnes & Noble. It's right there on the gay lesbian bookshelf. You can find it anywhere, get it online, whatever. But she talks about her transition, and she talks about when she first started her testosterone shots and her rabid sexual desires that ensued. And she said she felt she had an understanding of what adolescent boys feel like, you know, and all she wanted to constantly masturbate. She was, you know, she was just all over the place with her desires and her aggression, but she had no partners. So I'm thinking, okay, what's the outlet then? She doesn't have any sexual partners, but she's got all these hormones surging through her body. And then she talks about chest reconstruction. It's the second major step in a female to male transition. And here's what she says. It's a welcome subtraction to the household. One of the problems with transition, as in furnishing a home, is that you think you'll be satisfied once you get that male haircut, choose a new name, or change your driver's license, or start your hormones. But each progression only leaves you longing for more. So she admits that this is sort of an addiction and a compulsion. So think what that means also for our medical coverage of these people.
Well, you know, you also mentioned an interesting thing, the driver's license. The as we have on our website, the Massachusetts driver's license, when you renew it, there's a checkoff box for changing your sex, which was put in while Dan Grabauskas, who is a homosexual activist under, I believe it was under either Salucci or Mitt Romney, was the head of the, you know, motor vehicle registration department. So this is what, you know, this is the homosexual movement. There's no box to change your height, and people actually, their heights do change, but there is a box to change your sex when you're updating your license.
Mm-hmm. Well, getting back to this subject, which interests me, as a woman, I am just absolutely terrified at the thought that women can do this to themselves. So anyhow, I'm reading on, and clearly this woman is very disturbed. She talks about how she was flat-chested as a young woman and didn't get enough attention from men, and that was, she always felt, let me quote, "I always felt inadequate as a female. I never felt female enough, and somehow I came to the misguided conclusion that it was because my breasts weren't big enough." And she decided the only remedy was to get implants, and at age 30 she did, and she became a D cup. Okay, then she got the male attention she liked, but it wasn't enough.
So she had breast implants,
then later decides to take her breasts completely off. And then she said, it wasn't difficult to give up my breasts, even though I had spent a fortune on them with the earlier surgery. The whole point, after all, was to get rid of the markers of womanhood. And after the implants, they were pretty big markers. And then she talks about the scars that she has on her chest after the surgery. But what she's dying to do is go out in public and strip her shirt off and get a suntan where people can see her. And she said, I could now walk down the street without a shirt, and the only thing they could arrest me for was scaring little children.
Well, that's for sure.
And scaring people like me. She said that surgery involved a double mastectomy with some minor sculpting.
This is madness.
Okay, stop listening, little children. Okay, she goes on to say she had smaller nipples made, and that was because a surgeon took one nipple and made it into two. And then she also had pink, angry scars that ran across her torso, just above her diaphragm. Am I making people sick? Well, this is what this bill is going to have us all pay for, okay? One other thing, very interesting.
I guess you need to make people sick.
She said, this woman said that her mother died of complications from breast cancer. And she goes on to say, my biggest fear as a woman was that I might follow in her footsteps, losing the one thing that I believed made me female. Now, after having my breasts removed, the whole thing seemed ridiculous. Lying there with my female genitalia and my male chest, I could see that the whole breast thing was absurd.
You know, this is an example of the mental, you know, problems, the confusion, the issues that go on with people who want to do this to themselves. Mm-hmm. And your legislature, and there's a lot of them, have co-sponsored this bill because they want to please the homosexual movement. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, you are in big trouble. Let's see. I guess we're running out of time.
Oh, are we? Oh, shoot. I was going to talk about her further excursions into... well, it's just she goes on to talk about the artificial male genitals that she wears. And it's another example of how it's never enough. She starts with one model, not enough. That and the testosterone is making her female thing grow, you know, so it's like, but that's not enough. So the one model is not adequate. She goes on to a fancier one. And then she says, even that didn't satisfy. Quote, after a while, the excitement of having a dangling bulk between my legs turned to tedium.
Okay? I don't know. I think we got.
I'm sorry. This is what it's really all about.
Yeah. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to change. We're going to talk more. We're going to get into this bill next week. So come back here next week. Go to our website, massresistance.org. Go to our blog, massresistance.net. We have just scratched the surface on what is coming before you in the legislature on this bill. And on other bills, and we're going to be covering this, unfortunately. Right now, though, we're switching gears, and we're going to be talking with Rick Green of Wall Builders and Tom Haskins of the RAF Institute to talk about some events going on here. But ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned, and we'll be talking maybe a tiny more about this at the end of the hour. This is Brian Kamenker, Mass Resistance Radio. We'll be right back. And we're back. This is Brian Kamenker, Mass Resistance Radio, here in Boston. One of the books that a lot of conservatives in this part of the country really study hard, especially with the events over the last several years, is David Barton's Original Intent, which is a wonderful book that is about the constitutional process in the United States and the original intent of the Founding Fathers. It's a wonderful book. And I would recommend it to anyone. His organization, Wall Builders, is really a wonderful organization. It's a national group. And a representative from that organization, Rick Green, is going to be here in the Boston area, actually, on Tuesday, September 18th at the Celebration International Church. This is coming right up, Tuesday, September 18th at 7 p.m., to give a really wonderful lecture on America's Christian heritage. And we're going to be having Tom Haskins, who is running this, in our next segment. But we're very pleased to have Rick Green here for this segment. Rick, thanks a lot for coming on the radio with us.
Brian, it's my pleasure. Appreciate you having me on. Looking forward to being with you guys in a couple of weeks.
Oh, yeah, this is going to be wonderful. Tell us about Wall Builders and about what you're going to be bringing to Massachusetts on the 18th.
Well, you know, the name Wall Builders itself comes from a scripture in Nehemiah. It says, arise and rebuild the walls that we may no longer be a reproach. And the idea is back then, the walls have been destroyed in Jerusalem, that without those walls for a nation back then, you had no strength. I mean, you could be run over by any other nation at any time. The strength of a nation today depends greatly upon the foundation. You know, what our value system is, what we instill in our young people, what the belief system is of our people, and so it's very important for us to rebuild those walls, those foundations. And our goal is to bring back the revolutionary strategies of the Founding Fathers. I mean, these guys put in place what would become the most successful nation in the history of the world. I mean, they had to have had some pretty good ideas and some good principles and some good strategies, and we just seem to be, you know, the last 40, 50 years, done everything we could as a people to move away from those strategies and those belief systems. And so our goal is to try to bring that back, bring back a lot of the Founding Fathers that have been lost from our textbooks, a lot of their belief systems, what they said, what they did, and we believe it's vitally important to who we are as Americans.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you 100%. It is always fascinating to study the Founding Fathers and what their belief systems were and how they came to writing the Constitution of the United States of America. You know, it's pretty much the first national constitution, I believe. And it it's very troublesome, particularly here in Massachusetts, on how much American government and state government has drifted from constitutional principles, number one, and number two, how ignorant people are of what the Constitution says and what it means and what its original intent was. I know from the flyer that Tom Haskins has put out on your talk that some of the things you're going to cover, what were America's founding fathers really like? What was the religion of the founding fathers? Were they really secularists? You know, this whole business of separation of church and state is a horrible misconception that's, being promulgated. And did the founding fathers incorporate Christianity into civil government? What are some of the...
One thing we'll try to cover in our short time together will be even just the question of whether or not the founding fathers were Christians. Were they men of faith? And if they were, did that faith influence not only their private life, but their public life as well, and the way that they set up civil government. And there's such a revision of our history with regard to the faith of the founders. Most people today have been told and taught and now believe that the vast majority of the founding fathers were atheists, agnostics, and deists. None of that is true. You got about 250 guys considered to be the founders. That's the signer of the deck, signer of the Constitution, the folks that the governors of the time, the key military leaders, the first 90 in Congress that gave us the Bill of Rights. I mean, all these key people. And 95% of these guys were outspoken Christians, starting the American Tract Society, American Sunday School Union, Bible Societies, all kinds of things. There's only about 10 guys out of all the founding fathers that you can actually take off the table and say, okay, they weren't Christians. Now, Brian, you and I could talk about those 10 guys all day long. I could make arguments for the fact that they called themselves Christians. There's no question they were men of faith. They definitely were not atheists or agnostics or deists. But they did question, or some of them denied, the divinity of Christ. So, you know, for Orthodox definition, we can say, okay, we'll give you those 10. But even with those 10, they really believed it was important to have Christianity and faith as part of our public lives, a real bedrock principle of who we are as a people. So even just that one question of their faith and who the founders really were is a big deal, because it influences what we do today in terms of the role we allow faith to play.
Oh, absolutely. Well, now, one question that I have for you, the term deist, we hear that a lot from the left. What is a deist?
Well, and the key question is, which definition do you want from what time period? Because today, people think of a deist as, they kind of believe in a watchmaker God. There is some sort of being somewhere that put everything in motion, but then stepped back. They made the watch, and now it works on its own, and they're not involved at all in what's going on. There were a few of the founding fathers that you could back then call maybe believers in Christian deism, and they believed in God, and they believed in the hand of providence. They believed God was involved in our daily lives, totally opposite of what, deists today would believe, but they did not necessarily believe that Jesus was God, and so it was a very different category. Now, you could possibly put Jefferson in that category. You could put Ethan Allen and a couple of others in that category. But even some of those guys that you could call Christian deists were actually, made arguments, wrote books defending Christianity and defending the idea that God is very involved in our lives. They were very much against the more, quote, enlightened, more liberal, I guess, deism that was beginning to take hold in the founding period, not here in America, but in other nations. So, even that question of deism is not easy to answer. There's a lot involved there, but the short answer is, even the few founding fathers that were, quote, deist of the day, nothing like what we consider a deist of our day to be.
Okay, so a deist is someone who believes that God just sort of set things in motion and then stepped back, rather than being involved with our day-to-day lives. I'm with Rick Green of Wall Builders, who is going to be here in the Boston area September 18th. Rick, one of the other things which I'm sure you'll be covering is that the founding fathers understood that a democracy was a very fragile thing, or not really democracy, but the kind of democracy that they were setting up, and that it had a history of collapsing into tyranny and dictatorship in the other times that it had been tried in history, and that really the only way that something like this could sustain itself is through religious people and God's moral laws. And of course, that's been thrown out the window by, you know, modern thinkers. But I personally believe that that's the only thing that can hold a democracy together. Could you comment on that?
Yeah, and let me back up, because, you know, they would say they were very much against, quote, democracy. You know, they called democracy mobocracy.
Right.
They believed it was very important for us to be a republic and not a democracy, have a republican form of government, representative government, because otherwise you just kind of put your finger to the wind and it's whatever the most popular thing of the day is, instead of having those bedrock principles and, you know, being a constitutional republic like we are today. So that'd be the first clarification I would make.
Right, yeah, and you're right. The people use the word democracy as I did, but in fact, it wasn't intended to be a pure democracy, a constitutional republic.
Right, and most of our leaders are guilty of doing the same thing. I mean, even, you know, Bush talks about spreading democracy throughout the world. Well, no, we don't really want to spread democracy. We want to spread a republican form of representative government, not pure democracy, because it just doesn't work. But more to the heart of your question, absolutely they believed. I mean, even Franklin, another one we could put in the category of the 10 that was not a Christian, believed that if you took faith out of the culture, if you took faith out of a society like this and Christianity and the importance of religion and morality, that a free society could not sustain itself, that it would turn into chaos. And the founders echoed this sentiment over and over and over again and talked about how important it was to have, as Washington said, religion and morality, that they were indispensable supports of political prosperity. If you didn't have religion and morality at the heart of who you were as a people, you weren't going to succeed. And over and over again, they talked about, in a free society, if you lose the fact that that freedom comes from God, not government, not your neighbor, then you will lose the freedom eventually. You have to recognize the fact that the source of that freedom is God. Chief Justice John Jay, our first Chief Justice, talked about if we wanted to continue to have freedom, we better constantly honor the source of that freedom and recognize that it comes from God. So faith being a part of our system of government, our system of freedom, is vital. You take God out of the equation of freedom, you have no true freedom.
Oh, absolutely. And even as recently as John F. Kennedy's inaugural address, where he reiterated that our rights come from God. But, you know, it never ceases to really amaze me that our political leaders, even, you know, especially here in Massachusetts, if you don't have people in government who are moral, God-fearing people, it doesn't work, because you can't have a million checks and balances. You know, there has to be this sort of bedrock of understanding and morality, or the whole thing falls apart. And it happens over and over and over again.
Yeah, and at the heart of that is just simply the fact that in free society, you have to police yourself. You can't expect the government to control everybody. You don't want the government to control everybody. That's how you start slipping into a tyrannical state, is whenever you can't police yourself, when the people are unwilling to police themselves, and the only way you do that is through morality and religion, then the state has to step in more and more and more and control behavior. And the founders talked about it from the standpoint of, we'll either be controlled from within or we'll be controlled from without. And what religion and morality does is it creates that buffer. It creates that desire to do good. It creates that policing, if you will, through the conscience that we learn through religion. And without that, then you end up with the state having to come in and incarcerate more and have more laws. And I mean, that's part of why we've had so many new laws and such an effort for government to control more and more of our lives over the last 40 or 50 years, is because as a culture, as we moved away from religion and away from morality, it was necessary for the state to step in and do more and more. Not that I support the state controlling this. I'm just saying that's at the heart of why, as a culture, that's occurred.
Yeah, no question about it. When people don't police themselves, the government steps in and polices them. And, you know, this whole concept of separation of church and state is so against what the Founding Fathers intended and how a government like ours is intended to work.
It's a good thing to have a separation of the institutions. You know, you don't want a Church of England. You don't want the government taking over our denominations and our religion. And they obviously didn't want that. But this whole concept of separation of church and state, the way the court has created it over the last 60 years, is the antithesis of what the Founding Fathers intended. In fact, it ignores perhaps the most important part of the First Amendment, which is the free exercise our religion. And it, it not ignores it. I guess it actually cancels it out. I mean, we stop the free exercise of religion on a continual basis now. The court prevents kids from praying in school, prevents a student from mentioning Christ in their public school graduations, prevents, you know, all kinds of activities of living out faith. You can have the Ten Commandments as long as you don't get it out in public where people see it. You know, you can pray all you want at home or at church, but don't get on the public school microphone. You know, there's such an effort to shut down that free exercise of faith and that freedom of speech, certainly if it's Christian speech. And other faiths are not as targeted and typically are protected because of this false theory of the Bill of Rights is supposed to protect the minority, not the majority. That's not at all what the founders intended, but anyway, I can get off on tangent, so I better be quiet.
Well, I can see that this is going to be a fascinating evening, Tuesday, September 18th, 7 p.m. at Celebration International Church in Wayland. It's only $5 a person, and this I would encourage people to come and hear what you have to say. There will be more information on the Mass Resistance website about this. So, well, we'll look forward to seeing you there, Rick. Thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you having me on, and certainly look forward to being out there in a couple of weeks.
Great. This is Brian Kammacher, Mass Resistance Radio. We'll be right back. And we're back. Brian Kammacher, Mass Resistance Radio, here on WRCA Radio out of Boston, Cambridge. We just heard Rick Green from the Wall Builders organization. Fascinating talk. And he's coming on September 18th, Tuesday evening, 7 p.m., to the Celebration International Church to speak for a brand new organization here called the RAF Institute. And the organizer of this, the RAF Institute, and the event is a good friend of mine, Tom Haskins. And he's here to talk a little more about it. Tom, thanks for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
Well, you know, this is really important what you're doing. You know, the exploring the founding fathers and what they really said and what they really meant, especially here in Massachusetts, where much of it started. We've gone so far from the understanding of what the Constitution said and what the intent of the Constitution was, that, you know, people really need to be brought back to that. So tell us a little bit about the RAF Institute and about your event on the 18th.
Absolutely. The RAF Institute is spelled R-A-F-F, stands for Returning to America's Founding Fathers. The purpose of the RAF Institute is to re-educate, inform, empower, and reunite and motivate the conservatives and the Christians in America. We have been deliberately misinformed and educated with lies about America's traditions and heritage and the Founding Fathers, what they intended and how they structured our government and our Constitution, and how they administered the Constitution that they wrote and that the colonies ratified. I'll give you an example. George Washington said it is impossible to govern the world rightly without God and the Bible. James Madison called the father of our Constitution, said, "We have staked the whole future of American civilization not upon the power of government, far from it. We have staked the future of our political institutions upon our capacity to sustain ourselves according to the Ten Commandments of God." The Founding Fathers understood clearly that our democracy is only suitable for a moral and religious people.
Right, and you know, it's interesting. You know, a lot of people think, "Oh, yeah, a bunch of guys from the 18th century," but these were very deep thinkers. These were men who really had studied and understood how governments work and the role of God's laws and faith in keeping a government from becoming chaos.
Absolutely.
And you know, our society has, in many ways, deliberately gone away from that, and we're seeing the horrific results of that change in philosophy, and it just doesn't work.
You know, I'm actually working on a book that will show the social changes in America that have resulted from two key events that happened in 1962 and 63. Since those 2 years, the rate of crimes, violent crimes, sex crimes, prison populations, sexually transmitted diseases, unwed teen pregnancy, all of these social ills skyrocketed after 1962 and 1963, and even more so after 1967. Now, you might ask what happened in those years. In 1962, after 400 years of tradition, to the contrary, the Supreme Court suddenly decided it was unconstitutional to have prayer in the schools. And then in 63, it was the Bible, even though the Founding Fathers clearly practiced it.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. A good friend of mine who was one of my daughter's teachers at Newton North High School in Newton, he just retired. He was telling me that when he first started teaching there, this is at Newton North High School. It was Newton High School then. Every day was begun with a reading of the Lord's Prayer and a reading out of the Bible. And every teacher had a copy of the Bible on their desks that they would read from to start every day.
For 400 years we did that, and then suddenly the Supreme Court decided it was unconstitutional, even though the authors of the Constitution did it openly. Do you know the Founding Congress spent tax dollars to print Bibles for our schools?
Yeah, wow.
It's just astounding how much we've been lied to. And the purpose of the RAF Institute is to teach the conservatives and the Christians who are troubled by these events and by the destruction of American society the truth about our Founding Fathers and what is and is not constitutional. For one thing, three different presidents defied the Supreme Court and said, President Jackson said, okay, they made their decision, let's see them enforce it. The Supreme Court and the federal judges are not supposed to be the final arbiters of what is constitutional.
Right. And this is something that is so outrageous. That people are assuming that they can change laws and can decide what the Constitution says and throw laws out. The intent, as I'm sure we'll learn, was for them to decide in specific cases.
Yes, exactly. The Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court actually said in a decision that our Constitution is designed to protect us from lawyers. So we cannot count on lawyers to tell us what is constitutional. The Founding Fathers considered it vitally important that Americans be well-educated, and that included understanding the Constitution and their rights. And that we're not supposed to leave everything up to the judges and the lawyers. We're supposed to know our rights and demand our rights. And Americans aren't doing that. We've become sheep. And the RAF Institute, its purpose is to take the sheep that we've become and turn us into watchdogs. Educate us, empower us, inform us, and unite us. Some of the other topics we're going to have in the future are the Constitution, how our Founding Fathers administered it differently from our government today.
Wow.
Their quarterly meetings by region, each region having a different schedule, so that you can have meetings going on constantly, but every region would only have for years, so the people who administer the region don't have a lot of work to do. But it's very exciting, and this is our kickoff event, September 18th in Wayland, Massachusetts. It is at Celebration International Church at 7 p.m.
Okay, and we're going to have that on the Mass Resistance website, plus a map and everything. Are there some other speakers also?
Yeah, we've got Stephen Bennett, who's going to be coming in. At this event, I'm going to speak, and Rick Green, and that's pretty much it.
Okay.
Mostly Rick Green, about an hour and a half. Now, one of the unique aspects of the RAF Institute meetings is that after the speaker speaks, the audience is going to break up into small groups right where they sit and discuss and debate the topic. And then we'll end with question and answer from the audience for the speaker. So one of the purposes is to get Christians and non-Christians and conservatives and hopefully some liberals together to hear the truth about our Founding Fathers and our heritage and our history and what has to be done to heal America, and then debate it and discuss it the way they used to in the colonial pubs that John Adams visited as he went from Boston to Philadelphia and back for the first Constitutional Convention. This is the main purpose, to get these people together to talk in a civil manner, to learn the truth, to see the evidence, and this hopefully will change people's minds and enable and empower and motivate them.
Good. This is wonderful. And, you know, I've been at some events at Celebration International Church. It's a wonderful place for that kind of an event. It's really big. It's just laid out very well. So this is September 18th, Tuesday, at 7 p.m. How do people need reservations, or how do they just show up? I understand it's $5 a person. What should people do?
Yes, we have specifically priced it low so that anyone can afford it. It's $5 per person, and then any Christian or conservative organizations are welcome to have an informational booth or table also, which is $20, very, very cheap. And we're going to take an offering at the end for the speaker so that we can pay him for his time. And that's one of the reasons we made the entrance fee so low, so that people would have money left over for the speaker. And it's important that these speakers be paid for their time so they can afford to keep doing it. And that's one of the purposes of the RAF Institute, to create a network of events where these speakers can go and talk and inform us, educate us, and rally us and get paid for their time. You can buy it at the door. I would prefer that you email me, if you can, at thomashaskins@comcast.net, or just send a check to the RAF Institute, R-A-F-F, 36 Brackett Road, Ashland, Mass., 01721.
Okay.
Yeah.
So why don't you tell me to repeat all of that so people...
Sure. Yeah, it's better if they could send a check in the mail. That way I can have an idea of how many people are coming. The address would be the RAF Institute, R-A-F-F Institute, and 36 Brackett Road, B-R-A-C-K-E-T-T Road in Ashland, Massachusetts, 01721. Now, I'd like to also mention that we're looking for people who'd like to join the RAF Institute and help organize their region. We're looking for at least 3 people per region. And basically what's involved is contacting the local churches for their region, which is generally maybe a 20-mile radius,
okay,
approximately. So
all right.
Metro West is one region, Boston is another, North Shore, South Shore, et cetera, Worcester is another. And basically you contact the local churches and enlist 4 churches in the region, hopefully larger ones, to take turns hosting. Now, each church will only host once a year, so it's not a burden on them. And it just involves opening their facility to the event. And the proceeds are shared with the hosting church so that it's not a burden to them. And basically putting out the word and scheduling events for their region. Again, it's only 4 per year for their region, so it's not a lot of work. And it's an easy way to really significantly affect the this war that that has the fate of America in its hands.
All right, so this is wonderful. Again, Tuesday, September 18th, Celebration International Church, 7 p.m. We're going to have the contact information and also the email on the Mass Resistance website. Tom Haskins of the RAF Institute, thanks a lot for coming on the show. I really appreciate it, and we're going to get the word out, and we're going to really look forward to this. I think this is a start of something really great here in Massachusetts.
Absolutely. Thank you, Brian. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you. This is Brian Kamiker. We'll be right back. And we're back for our final really quick segment. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be covering a lot more of what we talked about earlier in our next week's show. But I want you to know that mass resistance is something you need to get involved with. It can't just be, you know, other people. Go to our website, massresistance.org. Go to our, you know, click on I Want to Get Involved. And the other thing is, ladies and gentlemen, is that we don't get funding from big organizations, big corporations. Our funding comes to keep this information coming from people like you. And so you can go to our website and donate by credit card. You can send a check to Mass Resistance Radio, P.O. Box 1612, Waltham, Massachusetts, 02454. That's Mass Resistance Radio, P.O. Box 1612, Waltham, Massachusetts, 02454. Get involved. We will be back next week. Go to our website, and we're going to keep up the fight. This is Brian Kamiker with Amy. See you next week.